the main thing with turkeys anyways is we keep them for so long. You know, broilers are off to market at a pretty early age, whereas turkeys, especially the toms and that, will be kept, 18 to 20 weeks or so. And so you're kind of constantly struggling, you know, with the issue of foot pad dermatitis development and that, because, you know, they're on bedding, you know, some kind of bedding that converts to litter, and trying to manage that. So then just, I think in general, managing a turkey house, and this is my own opinion, you know, is much more difficult.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. Sid Lines, an Ecolab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Poultry Podcast. I'm your host, Pratima Adhikari from Mississippi State University. Today we have a very experienced and very experienced guest who has served in the turkey industry for quite a while. We have Dr. Sally Noel. Dr. Noel, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, yeah, so I'll give a little bit more of my background in that. So yes, I've been at the University of Minnesota since 1985 and worked primarily with the turkey industry. And my position was primarily extension with a research component. And I have to say, for those of you that might be considering going into extension, to really seriously consider it. I enjoyed it very much over the years, and it gave me the opportunity to learn a whole bunch more about the industry, as well as different facets and issues in the industry. So I've done a little bit of turkey breeder, turkey market, waste management, nutrition, gut health, you name it, I've done at least some of it. So in collaboration with others, of course.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Noel. So you are, I know you retired back in 2022, but you're still active. So you do, I mean, always the work is never finished. And once you have these passion, a profession built up, then it's hard to also get away. So how much are you busy these days with research?
Well, I tell people that emeritus status means you work for the university for free. So, but you don't have quite as many meetings and reports and everything. So yeah, when I retired, I was on, I think, about six other student graduate committees yet, along with my own student, Gabby Firo.
Wow.
And so we were still finishing up things there. And since then, most of those have finished, but now I got added to a couple more committees, which I like. I like mentoring the students and everything. When COVID hit in 2020, we lost, you know, a lot of personnel and handling of data. I mean, not handling of data, but getting the data flow going again. So we're still kind of working on some of that stuff that just had to get pushed back to get going again. So.
Join the Poultry Science Association at our inaugural PSA Pacific Rim Scientific Conference, October 13th through 16th in Macau, China, to explore groundbreaking symposia and hear the latest research impacting the global poultry industry. Here is your chance to present your latest work, recruit future leaders, and network with other experts in the field. Help us shape the future of poultry science. Register now at poultryscience.org. See you in Macau.
Sure. And in fact, I was able to attend the International Poultry Scientific Forum last week. And I, in fact, saw your name as the co-authors in one of the abstracts. So
yeah,
you're so active.
Yeah. So that was, well, kind of just providing some advice, which, but yes, it's nice to stay involved. Unfortunately, a little bit before when I retired, we also had to shut down our Rosemount turkey research facilities, and And so kind of another reason to take and retire, as well as, you know, the type of research I needed or I was doing needed a different type of facility, a much upgraded facility as well. So I really do miss that part, although lifting 40 pound and 40 pound plus turkeys really wasn't getting to be my strong point anymore. So.
No, that's great. No, we're going to learn today a little bit about unique, well, it's a very common topic, which is a foot pad dermatitis. And Dr. Noel, we have heard this a lot with the broilers. And, you know, what about in turkey? So why this is an issue? Can you tell a little bit about a background?
Yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, there isn't a whole bunch of research being done in turkeys. You know, it's very expensive to do, but I think when you're comparing broilers versus turkeys, yes, I mean, foot pad dermatitis is probably as much of a problem in turkeys as it is in broilers. But the main thing with turkeys anyways is we keep them for so long. You know, broilers are off to market at a pretty early age, whereas turkeys, especially the toms and that, will be kept, 18 to 20 weeks or so. And so you're kind of constantly struggling, you know, with the issue of foot pad dermatitis development and that, because, you know, they're on bedding, you know, some kind of bedding that converts the litter and trying to manage that. So then just, I think in general, managing a turkey house, and this is my own opinion, you know, is much more difficult than say for broilers and that relative to ventilation. But yeah, it's a definite problem in turkeys. For those of you that might not be aware, you know, turkeys will be raised in two phases, or at least two phases anyways. One will be brooding, and then they'll be transferred over to a grow finish facility. And so there's opportunities for foot pad dermatitis to develop all the way through production.
So after knowing, it is also common in turkey. So with my knowledge, I have very limited and maybe zero knowledge in turkey. So thanks for telling that. There's a huge importance. I can see that. What causes this thing? What are the different, I know there are a lot of factors, but in your last so many years past experience, what are the common cause that you have experienced and what really causes that?
So, I mean, probably not, you know, not unknown. I mean, litter moisture is probably one of the key things, you know, that is involved right. In terms of the development. And then there's some different components of the litter as well that may interact with the skin, such as ammonium nitrogen. And but I think kind of getting back to, so where does that litter moisture come from?
Right.
And it can come from a variety of things. And I think that's part of the problem in terms of management. You kind of forget all the different sources, you know, where that moisture can be coming from. So obviously you have, you know, what's going on with the birds themselves and in terms of excreta moisture content and that, how much water is being taken in, how well functioning the waters are. Water quality also plays a role in that in terms of potentially overconsumption and water operation and that. And then kind of don't want to forget about feed, too. I do have a little bit of a nutrition background, so I get but, you know, we get into some of the things with the minerals, you know, like sodium, potassium, chloride, obviously the electrolytes and that, and an imbalance of those, you know, can take and affect water consumption and the excreta content, and also potentially, you know, excesses of calcium and phosphorus can interact with that, too. And that's a little bit of what my graduate students' work on foot pad dermatitis showed. Gabby Firo worked long and hard on foot pad dermatitis, and so she did note a correlation anyways with poor foot pad quality when, you know, the litter was high in content of sodium and potassium and chloride. And I think that just reflects that potentially the birds were drinking more water and then excreting those minerals into the litter and that. So, I mean, so we've got the feed, we've got what's going on with the watering system, how much water the birds are actually intaking. And then the other part of it then would be, you know, management of ventilation and the removal of that moisture, you know, from the litter, which, again, in a large turkey house costs a lot of money to do that. And so it makes it difficult, you know, to take and manage the litter to keep it from caking, people will take until do some litter amendments as well to try to modify and keep the moisture in check.
Yes. So in typically in a broiler diet, in layers diet, we balance for sodium and chloride. So we make sure in our formulation, we don't make sure we're not going above beyond the limit. I'm sure you do that for turkey, right?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, they're all fed a highly formulated balanced diet, but at times you can get, you know, ingredients that have different composition.
Right.
You know, or, you know, maybe, you know, a little more salt gets added than you think it was going to be added or something like that. So, yeah, so definitely, you know, nutritionists and the feed mills definitely are really paying a lot of attention to the quality of the feed and the formulations and that. But those things, you know, can still happen yet. So,
yeah. Do you balance more than beyond sodium and chloride, any other electrolyte like potassium? Anything like that? Has it been coming in a turkey nutrition side of the things?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think, people are looking at the electrolyte balance and that because of the impact that, I mean, it can not only have on management, but on other things that are going on with the diet as well and that. So, yeah, right. And I know in the research program, when we're doing a particular amino acid trials or something that we're adding a lot of material like chloride into the diet, and that we would definitely try to take and balance that out. So, yeah.
Yeah. So are we talking about like a market age turkey, right? Typically that goes before and then we want to control. How long, when does it really start? I mean, at the grower, a starter, like as a grower phase, or when do you see a lot of these food bad dermatitis happening as a later phase of their production or at the middle or the beginning? So how common is it and when?
Well, okay. Well, definitely, you know, you can see it in the brooder house. Okay. You know, because okay. Birds are growing fairly quickly. They may be encountering some enteritis conditions during that time too, which is going to take impact the moisture. As they're growing fast in that, as they get closer to the time, you know, when those birds are going to be moved, you know, there's that, again, that chance of feed and excreta, you know, packing up underneath the feeders and that, or excreta, you know, packing up around the, on the litter, you know, by the waters and that. And then the birds have contact with that material, and then that kind of starts the inflammation, you know, on the bottom of the foot pad. And in the brooder barn, you know, the producers will be paying a lot of attention to try to keep that caking down, get that material mixed in or removed or whatever, you know, so the birds don't have that contact with it. And in the field studies that Gabby did, you know, we actually found a relatively low occurrence of foot pad dermatitis, you know, in the brooder barn. On average, you know, it was generally, you know, somewhere between, I mean, a fair majority of the birds didn't have any lesions at all. And the other ones had some, you know, minor lesions, which actually, when we talk about scoring later on, we found out that a lot of times in the brooder barn, when we compared to postmortem scoring anyways, that they might have been overestimating the issue. But then when the birds move into the grower house, you know, again, for a while, these are very fast growing birds densities are there too. And so after a while, you know, you do see this issue with some of the litter caking up, moisture kind of sits on top of that. And then the birds will take and have contact with that material and develop a more severe form of foot pad dermatitis. And then it kind of usually seems, you know, around that 8 to 12 week time period anyways, which is more difficult. The birds are adjusting and growing fast. You know, maybe might be something going on with their gut at that time. And that's, you know, right. We had gotten into some things on probiotics, prebiotics, you know, to try to help with that transition. But in general, and unfortunately, you know, by the time the birds go to market, at least in the field studies that Gabby did, her findings were such that almost all birds had some kind of lesion on the bottom of their foot. Now, some of this might have been a very small lesion or very, you know, mild or moderate lesion. but definitely the number of and the percentage of severe lesions had really increased from when they were moved into the brooder facility.
Yeah.
Moved from the brooder facility.
Yeah, since Dr. Knowles, since you mentioned about now we, and thank you for driving this conversation, because I was going to ask you about the scoring system. And for more advanced producers or others who are interested to know, right? I mean, how this foot pad dermatitis is assessed in the field? How do you, what is kind of typical scoring system look like, if you can share about it?
Yeah, so maybe just to add a comment about scoring in the field. With turkeys, you know, again, they're big birds. And right. So it is difficult to score, you know, especially if you're looking at trying to score market birds, it's very difficult. They're big birds. And if they're not handled correctly, you know, you can get some damage to the wings and that type of thing. But from the project that Gabby was working on, we're trying to look at how accurate live scoring was to what we would call postmortem scoring, or scoring at the processing plant, which would generally be considered right. to be more accurate because of the conditions and a little bit of processing on the foot pad to make the lesion a little clearer in that. But so basically the scoring system we used, and the name escapes me right now, and I'm sorry about that. But anyways, you kind of go between, do you want a simplified scoring system or do you want something that's going to capture a lot of detail? And so the scoring system that we were using, a zero would be either no lesion at all or just the very, very beginnings of a lesion, maybe a small amount of discoloration. And then a one would be something that would be a little more moderate. You're seeing more discoloration, maybe a little bit of swelling, something that's called hyperkeratosis, where the scales start to kind of lift up off of the foot pad and that. And then we get to score two, which is where you have the necrotic lesions, you know, where it's down deeper into the epidermis. And I should say that, for one thing, I'm trying to remember, we had about 150 individual samples we were tracking all the way through these different scoring systems and that. And we never did see one where the lesion actually got down into the dermis. So it was, for the most part, a lot of times at least somewhat superficial, if you want to call that. But some of those lesions did get fairly deep. So for the criteria anyways, there's so many things you could look at. So some of the scoring systems might be looking at the depth of the lesion, how big the lesion is on the foot part, foot pad part, did it spread to the toes themselves. So it gets a little bit complex about, you know, and if once you have three or four things you're looking at, I can see where it gets easier. You know, some people will pick out swelling maybe easier than some people might pick out, you know, a little bit of change in coloration or something like that.
Okay.
And then you kind of can get into a discussion about, well, is a small lesion versus a large lesion, are they really the same thing? So are you scoring on size?
Right.
So what we kind of saw in several studies anyways, and also on the field trial, is when it was at score one, that intermediate lesion that caused the most problem.
Right.
And
okay.
What was a little bit interesting in the brooder barn, as I mentioned, in the brooder barn, a lot of times a score one was assigned when it was actually a normal.
Okay, so for some
reason with the smaller feet, and it could be, again, that you've got that little spot there, and because of that, it looks like it's filling up the whole foot pad or something. Mm-hmm. But then when we got to the market birds, we actually found out that many of the birds that were scored one actually were probably closer to a score two.
Okay.
And, you know, and for scoring where it's being used in animal welfare audits and that, you kind of want to, you know, make sure that you're a lot more accurate with that, you know, with what that score is telling you.
Right.
So, and we did some pairing, you know, we would have people both score the same sample in that. And actually the agreement, although again, you know, depending upon who was scoring, you know, the agreement was actually a little better than I thought it would be. So.
Oh, that's good. Because, yeah, I was thinking because, I mean, people score and there should be a kind of a standard, like what you said, 0, 1, or 2 scoring. But sometimes, I mean, 0 is 0. Maybe it's may not be a debate of a thing, but sometimes a 1 or 2. And similarly in the other kind of scoring. For example, I do a few kill bone, like kill scoring in layers. So most of the time we have to, you know, I make sure I have people around me, like 2 or 3, and we kind of come in agreement because then, and I see what you're saying, because sometimes it's not an objective, it's really subjective. So mm-hmm. You want to make sure people, you respect their opinion. I mean, yeah. You know, yes, that, and I think that could be a challenge. I mean, especially with the turkey bird, and not many of the people or faculty or, you know, researcher work in turkey. So there could be another challenge there, which with a minimum experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like, at least in our research trials, again, we would typically have 2 people scoring at the same time. And we would have a chart with the description and, you know, the photographs and everything. And that's the best way to do it. But you get out into a commercial turkey barn.
Yeah.
And if you do want to take and do some live scoring, most likely you're going to probably only have 1 person that's going to be scoring. So, but it also points out the, you know, the aspect of having good training, mentoring, who's ever going to be doing that scoring and that, so that they recognize the lesions and can score appropriately then.
Yeah, Sally, like, I'm just curious to know, I mean, from your experience working with the turkey and foot bad dermatitis, what is the effect of these dermatitis with these birds having high score, 2 or 3, with the relationship to the gut health? Are the gut health good? Have you looked into that relationship? You know, how good are these birds, like digestion-wise, or have you looked into those connections? I'm sure you have. So what is your take on?
I wish we had. So,
I know.
Pretty much the information that we, at least for the field trials, you know, we got a sense, you know, for whether the flock was doing good or not. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, while we had a lot of individual observations within a flock, we didn't have a large number of flocks. And so it was, we didn't have, basically, we didn't have enough information to try to, you know, bring those two together, unfortunately. So.
Yeah. So can this bird recover back once they get the foot pad dermatitis?
Yes. And I'm glad you brought that up because in scoring systems generally don't recognize recovery.
Okay. Okay.
It's still listed at for the scoring system, which I forgot, was Dr. Berg from Sweden. She had published a number of papers on foot pad scoring systems, and that was her system that we were using. Apologize for not remembering that before.
But
one of her pictures actually shows a regenerating foot pad. And so basically what happens is you get that damage to the, you know, after you get that to the number 2 level, you know, quite a bit of the surface of the foot pad is affected, material, skin is kind of starting to slough off. So the upper levels of the epidermis are sloughing off. And the scales have also come off at the same time. And so it looks like a very smooth surface. But you're not seeing the discoloration, the necrotic material anymore. So that epidermis is starting to recover at that time.
Okay.
And I think it would be worthwhile to maybe include that in a scoring system that, yeah, the birds kind of might have gone through a little bit of a tough time, but now the foot pad is recovering.
So they can recover back. So how long does it take for them to recover? Like a week, few days, you know?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you wish. So we also followed some birds where we purposely put them on litter and wetted it. Mm-hmm. And we got the litter moistures up to around 50% plus or so. And that happened over a week time. And then A week later, the birds had already developed a fair amount of lesions that we would have given a score one at that time. And then after a while, we stopped wetting, and then they continued for another week after that for the scores to take in worse and get worse.
Okay.
But then we started to let the litter dry out naturally, and the score started to go down, but it was a good 2 weeks for them to not be as severe, but they were probably still, you know, around the score of one yet, even after a couple of weeks. So it does take a fair amount of time, you know, for that lesion to take in and heal.
Yeah, no, we know that the bird health, there's a nutrition, there's welfare and a health associated with birds. So everything is very important. And again, we're talking about this market age turkey. And I mean, if their, you know, food is not good, then, you know, we have a lot of problem going into the market. So I'm really glad today I was able to talk with you about a little bit different gear. Bringing turkey in our conversation of the podcast.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Behringer Ingelheim, health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International, creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. Resistance affecting your coccidiosis program? AccuGut C.1 is a proven tool for your coccidiosis toolbox. AccuGut C.1 is a phytogenic formulated for poultry with plant-derived substances including essential oils, herbs, spices, and plant extracts. Reduce the reliance on chemical coccidiostats or ionophores to build cost-effective rotation and shuttle programs. Give your traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmanich.com/AccuGut to learn more.
I am very curious to ask you one question, which is out of the conversation. So I saw at the back of your, there's a Lake Girl, the poster you have. Is there any story you want to share?
Well, well, even though I'm still working for free for the university, yet I have been trying to develop different hobbies. And so fishing is, I mean, I've always liked to fish. And then
it's cool.
I was actually at a Minnesota Turkey Growers Conference. I think it was up in Detroit Lakes, and I went into the gift shop, and it's like, oh, I want this. So, yeah, I tried to get out on the lake. I also started to take up fly fishing, too. Even though I've been working at it for 3 or 4 years, the number of fish I've caught have been relatively small, but it's still fun.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoyed today. And thank you for your time. I know you're super busy, even though you're not. You're already emeritus. But as you mentioned, you look very busy. But I really appreciate your time. And thank you for sharing your knowledge. Do you have anything to share to our audience before we wrap up?
You know, I think, you know, foot pad dermatitis is a struggle, but it is something that, you know, to keep an eye on and, you know, look at that processing data really closely. You know, maybe there's opportunities, at least for turkeys, when you are handling the birds, you know, that you can take a quick look at the foot pads and see what's going on without making any special effort as well. So, yeah, so just keep after it.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, as being turkey being unique to the North American, North America side of it. So we need to find more in this country. More research needs to be done.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sally Noel, for today's episode. For all of you listening or watching us in different platform, thank you for watching this episode today. I hope you guys learned something out of it. I learned something out of it with Dr. Sally Knowles' conversation. Again, until next time, I will see you again. Thank you all and take care.
Bye-bye.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.